There we go.
Good.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody. This is David Lickin. It is Monday, beautiful Monday here in Central Texas, and where we're broadcasting from. It's being broadcast all over the nation. It's Monday, April 12th, tax week. Everyone got their tax returns done? I don't know about you, but I was up late last night working at TurboTax, making sure mine got done, which is a great opener for the topic we're going to have and be discussing later on in the program. That's accounting, that wonderful, wonderful topic that you can love it and you can hate it. But I'll tell you, we're going to teach you to love accounting by the time we're done. We've got a special guest, Andy Alvey with Mortgage Banking Solutions. He's a partner in the business with me, someone you're going to enjoy. If there's anyone who can make the topic of accounting exciting, Andy can. Also, as a guest with us will be Glenn Corso coming back to give us an update of what is going on with some of the activity in the Senate bill. Andy Alvey, we appreciate you being the producer. I was Andy Alvey, Andy Schell, and now we got Andy Schell. So, excuse me, we have Andy Schell as the guest. Minor correction there. Our producer is a good producer. That's Andy Alvey, and not to get the two confused. But, Joe, before I confuse our audience anymore, let's get back on schedule. Let's talk about interest rates and what is
TurboTax,
going on today.
I think TurboTax kind of rattled your brain last night, Dave.
Well, yeah, accounting always rattles my brain. I got a refund, so that's all I care about. I got to that point, I quit. So.
All right. Dave, the market is up. It's nice today. We're up 9/32. We've been up as high as 10/32, so it's about 28 basis points better than where we ended the day on Friday. Favorable repricing has been seen from some correspondents. So, it's good. No real economic reason for it to be higher. The Dow's up also. The Dow gained above 11,000 this morning and has stayed there most of the day. So, just a good start to the week.
Good. Yeah, we love hearing that.
Last week was good, too. Everyone feared the end of the MBS purchase program, right? Well, last week we saw prices improve about 75 basis points. That's prices, not rate. But, last week we saw a couple pretty compelling reasons for mortgage rates to improve, and they were driven off of a very successful 10-year Treasury auction. Very strong demand. Yield reduced, strong foreign participation. That came out on Wednesday of last week, and mortgage rates kind of followed suit. We saw a 16/32 improvement in prices on Wednesday.
In fact, that the foreign participation was up there at 43%. That is really that's got to be a vote of confidence.
You'll remember two or three auctions ago, we had a very poor, I don't remember if it was a 10-year or 7-year, but one of the intermediate-term treasuries got almost no foreign participation, and the market suffered. Theory might have been at the time we were being sent a signal by the Chinese government, but I guess they're back in and happy now because there were people buying.
That was to our relief.
The minutes of the March 16th Fed meeting were released last week, and that also was positive for mortgage markets. We've heard the Fed say this. It's nice to hear it It's nice to see it in the minutes and to hear that it's almost a unanimous belief, at least at March 16th, that rates needed to be kept low for foreseeable future and that inflation, by all accounts, is under control. So good results of the minutes, and then late last week we saw a little bit of a flight to quality as the debt issue in Greece keeps raising its ugly head. And fortunately, over the weekend, the European Union committed, I think it was $40 billion to help settle the issues regarding the debt in Greece. So maybe that will be behind us for a while. But just, you know, I mentioned earlier the MBS purchase program. Since March 31st, the end of that program, MBS prices are a little bit worse. Mortgage rates are a little bit higher. But, you know, we're just talking about basis points. It's not even an eighth of a percent in rate. So,
That's tremendous.
We got through it. Again, rates are a little bit higher, and they crept up a little bit as we're nearing the end of the program as well. But still not a devastating blow to the mortgage market. So that's good.
And Joe, we've talked so much in the program in the past that this is distinctly a possibility. And for our listeners, it has got to be encouraging for you that you make your livelihood in the area of mortgage lending to know that the Chinese are back. I never thought we'd be rejoicing over the fact that the Chinese are back in and buying, but that we've really become heavily reliant on foreign capital. So the fact that 43%, I'm highlighting that, got that circled on your notes that you sent me before the program, Joe. Very significant. What do we got coming up this week? Looks like it's a pretty big week.
Well, big week for economic news. The CPI and retail sales are both going to be announced at 8:30 on Wednesday. So if you have the ability to, I suggest you pay attention at that time on Wednesday at 8:30 Eastern time. CPI is expected to be measured as very tame, just a tenth of 1% increase in both core CPI and CPI. Retail sales is expected to show a nice improvement over last month, a 1.1% improvement. That includes auto, apparently without auto. Or maybe there's lots of autos being sold because the gain for the ex-auto is 0.5% or 0.5% pickup. But, you know, both those are typically significant events to the mortgage world. And if those estimations or the consensus is wrong by much, they will be market-moving events one way or the other. Thursday, industrial production comes out, which is also a pretty significant event. Anything that measures economic activity, especially as we're sort of teetering on, are we growing or are we not growing, will be significant. It comes out Thursday at 9:30. But generally, for the week, the forecasts are somewhat upbeat. You know, the improvements over prior month are forecast just about across the board. And inflation is considered to be under control. So when you look at what drives mortgage rates higher, meaning primarily inflation and inflation driven by economic activity, it's nice to see that things that people are believing that we're starting to get better and the economy is starting to get better in a tame interest rate environment. So it's kind of like for mortgage markets, that's a good environment to be in.
It's a great environment to be in, and I think we keep coming back. We talk about this. We were talking about this on the pre-program the pre-program conference call that we have, discussing a lot of this. And there's always the lingering concern: can we have a sustainable, you know, recovery and an encouraging situation scenario when we have basically effectively a jobless recovery? And there's a lot of people that are questioning that, and our next guest in the next segment will maybe get into that a little bit with Glenn. He had some great comments on that, but there's always that concern. But these are really encouraging, and we're in everybody out there, you listeners that are in the mortgage production world that are looking at funding loans, it is so critical that you operate in the now. Operate with an understanding of what can go and which direction it can go, but operating in the now, operating in the present. And the present looks good right now, Joe. This is encouraging.
Yeah, it does. You still look at where rates have been over the last decade, even though they've been a little lower this year, they are from a decade long perspective, they are very, very low. So it's a good environment.
It is a great environment. Folks, we're here to help you digest those issues so you can stay present, focused on your business. So many of you are calling in from all over the country. We're getting feedback and emails each week of how our listenership is growing, and we want to thank many of you who have been so good about forwarding the link and the phone number to dial and listen to this to your network. We put it up on LinkedIn every week. We appreciate you so much doing this and helping expand the listener base as we are really focusing on bringing a genuine up-to-the-minute mortgage update across the country about all the topics across our industry. Very encouraging to see this, and we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Welcome back. This is David Lickin. It's Monday, April 12th, tax week, everybody. And it's always a challenge for those of us out there. We've got special guests with us again. Glenn Corso with the Community Lending Project. Glenn, I messed that up, so you have to help me with that. But it's good to have you back on the program. And standing out there somewhere on one leg, balancing your cell phone. Anyone who travels, you know how when you come off a flight, you get out there and you try to find a place where you have a good signal. And it's never predictable. So we have Alice. She just walked on an airplane. She is standing somewhere, probably in some contorted position, to make sure she hangs on her signal. Because we see that she's coming on and coming off. But back with us again, as we have every week, is Alice Alvey. Thank you so much. And Glenn, thank you so much for joining in on this segment. We may lose Alice, folks. And if we do, we're just going to keep right on going. She was good enough to send us her notes. But without further ado, Alice, before we lose that signal, let's get you to get an update. And then let's bring in Glenn and finish up kind of what we started to talk about last week.
Oh, thanks, Dave. And actually, my signal's been okay. It's been me needing to disconnect with all the airport background noise. So I finally think I found a quiet space for a few minutes here, and I want to give you an update. As everybody knows, we've got this traffic report going, and I know I'm glad to have Glenn on the line to talk some more about this restoring American financial stability. Obviously with Congress back in session, we expect some major movement on that. So I'll save that for the end when Glenn and I can talk that through. I think one of the things I wanted to make sure everybody was aware of is we have taken a look at H.R. 4811. This is the FHA Safety and Soundness and Taxpayer Protection Act of 2010. Now, this came out a little over a month ago, but it is definitely something that we need to pay attention to, and that is because it's going to have an impact on several aspects of our FHA business. What we want you to be aware of within this is the bill that would increase the annual mortgage insurance premium. One of the things I find interesting in the bill is a little piece that would allow the commissioner to come up with a flexible risk-based premium pilot program for first-time home buyers. It's going to have an upfront and a monthly and a combination, so it really kind of opens the door for for FHA to come up with some alternatives in structuring MIP premiums. It's going to be a three-year, or it's proposed to be a three-year period where this program would be rolled out across all boundaries in the country, so it wouldn't just be for the big lenders, and we'll wait and see what happens out of that. Another big part of this is it really expands the indemnification capabilities of FHA, and then in this is that there would also be a study on the impact of the fund related to seller concessions. I find this interesting because, HUD keeps trying to talk about changing seller maximum contributions from 6% down to 3%. This is calling for a study on that subject. So I'm curious to see if this means that we get a little bit of a reprieve until that study's done. So I think this bill's definitely going to get some legs. We need to watch this one as well. A couple other bills that are in traffic. There's a bill out there to extend VA housing loan benefits to children of veterans. There's a potential bill. There's a bill 4766 looking to permanently extend protecting tenants at foreclosure. And then there's also an interesting bill out there, House Bill 4826. It's called Neighborhood Stabilization Through Short Sale. This creates a one-time tax deduction in some cases as a result of a short sale. But what I find interesting is there's also a part in there about telling Fannie and Freddie to waive an underwriting requirement. You know, that we typically have to wait after foreclosure for 3 to 5 years before we give someone another loan. This bill is trying to tell Fannie and Freddie what to do in their underwriting requirements regarding short sales.
Interesting.
So that's the traffic report as of now, and let's get Glenn in on the conversation. We have so much more, but I know you want to try and get Glenn in here on that Restoring American Financial Stability.
Yes, Glenn, good to have you with us again. Glenn is the Managing Director of the Community Mortgage Banking Project. He's got extensive experience. I've known him for many years. He's 33 years of experience in the mortgage business. He is on the cutting edge, the tip of the spear, I'd say, trying to make an impact on our inside the Beltway on many of these issues. Glenn, thank you so much for being on the program.
Well, thank you too, Dave. I really appreciate the opportunity to appear on your program. So if you don't mind, what I'd like to do is let me start with just a quick recap of the specific provision in the Restoring American Financial Stability Act that we're so concerned about that Alice
Great
mentioned.
Idea.
And then we'll talk a little bit about where things stand and we'll go on from there. So the Restoring American Financial Stability Act, as Alice mentioned, is the big financial reform bill that the House worked on, last year and finished up late in December, and then the Senate took it up this year, and the Senate Banking Committee worked on it and reported it out just before they went off for their Easter holiday. And now the next step is going to be action on the Senate floor where they hope to pass the bill and then bring it to conference with the House and then produce some final legislation for the President to sign. The provision that we've been looking at very closely because we're so concerned about it for the entire mortgage market, but most particularly for independent mortgage bankers, is the risk retention provision. Which is
that's the truth.
Yeah, boy, it really is. That's a provision that would require all mortgages that get sold in the secondary market and end up in a securitization for them to be subject to a 5% risk retention requirement, and that requirement isn't very well defined. So whether it's going to be you've got to hold capital equal to 5% of every loan you originate, or whether it's going to be a contingent liability on your balance sheet that'll drive your bankers crazy. Right now, we don't know, but it's going to be something like that. And what we've been we have been trying to promote, along with a coalition of other lender groups, such as the Mortgage Bankers Association and the Housing Policy Council and the ABA, is to say, look, you should exempt soundly underwritten mortgages from these risk retention requirements. So if a loan has a down payment by the borrower, the borrower's income and assets are fully documented, the loan amortizes within its terms, so no negative amortization and no balloon payments, and it's either a fixed-rate loan or if it's an ARM, it has annual and lifetime interest rate caps. In other words, the kinds of loans that are being made today, they should be exempted from risk retention. If you want to have a payment option ARM, if you want to have a no-doc loan, if God forbid if those ever come back, then those should be subject to risk retention. And those are the highly risky loans that, in essence, you want to discourage people from making. But you know, we're a free society. We don't like to put in absolute prohibitions, so we won't absolutely prohibit those loans. But we certainly will do everything we can in the law to kind of discourage you from making those. Because in the end, you know, what we want competition in the mortgage market on price
Absolutely.
And on service and things like that. We don't want competition on underwriting standards and risk management features. That's the one thing we don't want. So what we're trying to do right now – yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Alice.
No, I was just going to ask Glenn, you know, in everything you hear on the news this morning, you know, they're talking about the fact that this bill is going to be put back in front of everybody, and they zero in, obviously, on all the aspects of the bill that are related to derivatives and that side of the market. And then this seems to be like a side sentence that gets thrown in that no one's really paying attention to except our industry, yet it has such a huge impact. Do you think it's going to get lost in the shuffle? What do we do to make sure it doesn't get lost in everything else of Congress people trying to get their political foothold in, I've changed mortgage banking and this is never going to happen to anybody again?
Right. Well, that's really a great point, because that's exactly what we've been running into. We've had a situation where people are so focused on all those other issues that you mentioned, too big to fail and big issues like that, that it's really hard for people to look at this issue. And when you read the words in the law, it seems deceptively mild. And then we have to spell out to people exactly what it means. And we say, look, if you have a company that's originating, you know, $1 billion worth of loans a year, $500 million, just pick a number, think about what it does to their capital level if they have to increase their capital by an amount equal to 5% of all the volume that they've originated in a given year. I said many of these companies are independent, privately owned companies. They don't have access to stock market capital. They can't just turn around and issue a new common stock
exactly.
issuance and raise a bunch of capital. You're gonna put them out of business, and then you're gonna concentrate the business even further with the large bank-owned companies. Is that really what you want? Making them even too big to fail, kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's been very tough. What I'll do, if you don't mind, is I will defer an answer to part of your question, Alice, until just a couple of minutes later, where I'll talk about what people should be doing. In order to bring this, bring some attention to this issue. I just wanted to make a couple of other brief points. The Senate bill right now places three agencies in charge of risk retention: the SEC, the FDIC, and the Comptroller of the Currency. Two of those three agencies have now issued regulations that feature risk retention. The FDIC did it last year. The SEC did it last week. And both of them would impose a 5% across-the-board risk retention requirement. Now, these are proposed regulations. They're not in final form yet. And they only affect narrow segments of the market, because none of those agencies has authority to require the entire mortgage market to have risk retention. But that's what the Senate bill would grant them, is authority together, the three of them, over the entire mortgage market. So
yeah, can
we feel
those
like...
Again? So it's the SEC, FDIC, and the Comptroller of Currency.
Right, the OCC.
The OCC. That seems like a little bit of an interesting matchup. I mean, is there any thoughts behind that? We're getting some commentary or some emails rolling in. What's with the three of those? Where's the common ground? How does that work? Is there any anticipation?
Well, there's certainly concern on the part of mortgage market players that none of these three agencies really has a particular expertise in the mortgage industry, and
exactly.
The concern is that, why isn't HUD at the table? Why isn't the Fannie Freddie
right.
regulator at the table? You know, right now, the entire mortgage market is composed of FHA-insured loans and Fannie and Freddie conventional conforming loans with a little bit of VA thrown in. So,
yeah.
And yet the agencies that are involved with that are not included in this. I can't explain that to you. I don't know why these three agencies were chosen.
Well, listeners, I just want to say this. If Glenn can't figure it out, then there's the sharper guys on this. I'm not entirely sure where we're going to get. Glenn, we'll be right back. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to continue this discussion. Remember, we have Glenn Corso, Managing Director of the Community community mortgage banking project with us. And later in the program, talking about the exciting topic of accounting, is Andy Schell, Managing Director of MBS Mortgage Banking Solutions. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this
Looking
word.
For a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need, Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Thank you so much. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. This is Dave Lickin. It's Monday, the 12th of April, and it's tax week, as we've talked about. But we have special guests with us, Glenn Corso, Managing Director of the Community Mortgage Banking Project. Glenn, we want to hear more about that at the end of the program. A lot of people are saying, hey, I want to become familiar with that. I've heard him on his program a couple times. I'm starting to connect with the fact that he's doing something. I want to know more about it. So before we let you off today's program, give us more information about that. But let's continue on with what we're talking about with Alice, standing somewhere in some quiet corner of the airport where she just flew in there in South. Is it South Carolina, Alice?
Yes, I'm in Columbia, South Carolina for the Ag First Convention. I'm speaking there, so always a
good
fun person to work with. Yes.
Well, we appreciate you dialing in. Let's continue on with the discussion. Glenn, before I rudely interrupted you, you were trying to make several points. I want to make sure we get all those points understood, and then we want to understand how we can help our listeners make a difference, what they can proactively do, and how to do it intelligently. So let's continue with your points.
Okay, good. So I'll sort of wrap up what I'm saying, and then I'll get to the what should you do part. The only other thing I want to throw in is that keep in mind that the legislation really gives these three agencies not only the authority over risk retention, but it gives them the authority to decide how risk retention should be imposed upon the issuers of securities and the originators of the assets that go into the securities. So that means that those three agencies can decide, okay, for mortgage-backed securities backed by residential mortgages, the issuer should have a 1% risk retention, and the other 4% should be on the originators, or all 5% should be on the originators, because really they're the ones that are creating the assets in the first place. We just don't know how that would come out. But that's the authority they're given. So now,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know what? A lot of people. This is going to have the biggest impact on the independent mortgage banker. And you know, you look at the wholesale market. We've got a lot of brokers listening, a lot of originators that are still, whether you're a banker or a broker, they're still originating some amount of product that's being brokered out each month. And this is going to have the biggest impact on those that are still in the third-party origination business, the wholesale business, the broker business, whatever channel, however you want to define that channel, because these are the ones that are going to be impacted. A lot of the banks have exited the correspondent channel, have exited the wholesale channel or the broker channel, third-party origination channel, and this is going to have a dramatic effect on them. Is it not going to, Glenn? Am I correct in that assessment?
You are absolutely correct. As a matter of fact, last week when I was talking to a reporter from the American Banker about the SEC regulations that I mentioned, the reporter was asking me, she was saying, well, you know, the SEC only has authority right now over security issuers, not over originators. So that means this isn't going to affect the originators. And I said, well, no. I said, hold on. I said, look. I said, if, in fact, with these requirements, once the issuers have to comply with these requirements with 5% risk retention, you've got to believe that that's going to be reflected in the requirements they impose on the originators they deal with or on the price they pay to originators for the loans they buy from them. But in some way, shape, form, fashion, mm-hmm. it's going to get reflected in the economics of the transaction.
Absolutely.
Think of it. I don't know what everyone's margin is these days, but you do volume of loans and origination, and you make a What's a good margin, Dave? 50 basis points net bottom line on production?
Yeah. We're going to be talking about that with Andy here in a little bit. Yeah. But absolutely.
So for every loan you make, you're 4.5% going backwards if you have to retain risk on 5%.
Yeah. It's just scary. It's interesting because someone just texted me and said, hey, Lickin, you were quoted last week in an article related to what GMAC was doing. Glenn, did you see that article that GMAC is make adjustments to compensation? Someone's asking, is all of this related to that? Are companies like GMAC ahead of the curve making adjustments? Is this at all related?
Well, it's related in the sense that there's kind of a belief in Washington that one of the things that drove the mortgage market debacle that we've had is that many people got compensated right up front at closing for what they did, and then they walked away and didn't have any further responsibility for the loans that they originated. And so the thought is that this 5% risk retention is supposed to keep the companies on the hook, and the idea is, okay, what about the loan officers and the brokers? Shouldn't we space out their compensation in some way so that they don't get all of it up front? Now, I'm not saying that's a good idea or a bad idea or what, but it certainly is a commonly held belief in some circles in D.C.
And then just to throw quickly, that compensation issue, though, is technically a part of a proposed rule in Reg Z, not actually part of this legislation.
Well, it's part of the yes and no. By that, I mean, you're absolutely right that there is a proposed reg out there right now. But then in addition, the House bill grants the authority to the Federal Reserve over compensation issues, gives them broader authority than they have assumed under Reg Z.
Yeah, and I think it's such a – Glenn, you hit on a really, really good point I want to emphasize for our listeners, and that is there is an overriding theme, overriding impression that the loan officers, because they got all their money up front and they were almost incentivized to put people in – and this, again, not saying it happened, but there was some reality to this – but they have an overriding theme that – or a feeling, and this what they're going after is that – loan originators were incentivized to put people in bad programs. And while there was certainly some compensation plans and there were some errors and things that need to get fixed, things that were being done that could have probably been handled and compensated differently during that particular season, by and large, most responsible loan officers that are listening to this radio program are trying to do their best to get the borrower in the right program. So I really want to make sure our listeners draw that point out. So have we got your points out? Because I really want to get to how can they make a difference. So many people need to rise up and have their voice be heard.
Actually, that's a perfect lead-in for that, Dave, because what I want to do is say this. Every state, as you know, has two senators. Since this bill is now going to be on the floor of the Senate, and we think it's going to be on the floor at the end of this month or early in May, this is the perfect opportunity to contact your two senators. You can do it through email, through mail, telephone call, whatever you're most comfortable with. All of the above, sure, absolutely, all of the above. Tell them how vital an issue it is for you as a a key participant in the mortgage market, and tell them that you support an exemption for soundly underwritten mortgages from the risk retention requirements. And that the regulator should be specifically directed to create such an exemption. And then I would urge you to add that, by the way, you should expand the lineup of regulators that have control over risk retention to include HUD and FHFA, the Fannie Freddie regulator. In other words, bring in the two regulators that have a lot of mortgage market expertise.
Lynn, this is Joe, and I think it's important to point out that soundly underwritten loans is a phrase that's used on purpose because everyone's got it in their mind that, FHA, VA, Fannie, Freddie. Well, as we talked about earlier, Fannie and Freddie may not be around for a whole lot longer, and there are plenty of very well underwritten, soundly underwritten jumbo loans that should be in the same category if they're soundly underwritten. So it's a distinguish from the old concept. It is soundly underwritten loans, very much like what we're making right now, right? I mean, we talked about this earlier in the pre-call. We're making great loans right now. And for Glenn, you put it, you phrased it so well as to why, you know, we should address the law today as being a way to keep what we're doing now, right?
Exactly right, Joe. And I want to say that I want to stress, because I've heard from so many mortgage bankers, and I think we all have, about the fact that the quality of the loans they're producing today, they say, is outstanding and much better than it's been for the past 10 or 15 years even. And so that's what we want to preserve, is we want to preserve this quality going forward. And we want to make sure that however the mortgage market competes, it won't compete on the basis of credit quality and lessening that credit quality going forward.
Well, again, this is getting a lot of feedback here right at the moment. And one of the comments that are coming in is going, Dave, I fly on airplanes and I don't even dare admit that I'm in the mortgage business to the guy sitting next to me, because we've gone from being rock stars to just, you know, the disdain of the whole economy and anyone frustrated by the economy. How does a originator go to Wall Street, I mean, go to within the Beltway, go to their two senators and their representatives on these issues, knowing that they're looked at as, you know, with this disdain across the industry? So, I mean, is it worth it? I think we need to encourage our listeners out there, Glenn, as the bottom line of it is, yes, your voice makes a difference, and you need to how to relate it back to why this is important to the constituency, to those senators' constituency. Can you speak to that, please?
Sure. Two things. First of all, point out that the mortgage industry is the means by which people in their district or their state get the financing they need in order to buy a house. So we need a robust mortgage market if they want their constituents to be able to buy a house now and in the future. The second thing is, frankly, I understand that reaction. I certainly have heard plenty of it on Capitol Hill when I say I represent lenders. And my answer to that is, but understand that we're representing people that it didn't really engage in those kinds of practices. The people that did engage in those kinds of practices, they're gone. I mean, they went out of business, they were driven out of the industry, et cetera. We understand that you want to prevent this from happening again. We share that interest.
Good point.
That's what I think the answer has to be.
That is such a good point. It's standing up and differentiating yourself from the crowd that was doing a lot of that. Your point is, well, most of them are gone out of the business, or at least they learned a valuable lesson. And they're pretending they didn't do it. I think for those that were doing it, that are still here, they're pretending they didn't. Glenn, let's talk briefly. When you reach out to them on the phone, on the email, how do you recommend they do so? One of the points we've been talking about is you've got to relate this. You can't just stand up and down and throw a hissy fit and say that you're going to have an impact. How can they be effective in communicating in any of the means that you're talking about here when they're talking to their senators?
I think the most effective way to do it is to talk a little bit about the kinds of lending activity that they're involved in right now. If you're an originator, if you're the head of production, whatever it is, talk a little bit about the loans that your company made, the loans that you were personally responsible for, and say, look, I helped last year to put X number of families into a house by making loans that they're able to afford. I want to keep on doing this because it's my business. And I know that you want people in your district to have access to stable, affordable mortgages. That's why I'm making this suggestion. And I think it's good to always stress that it's from the consumer standpoint, that it's in your best interest to make stable, affordable mortgages. I've had so many originators tell me that a huge chunk of their business comes from referrals of satisfied customers. So I wouldn't hesitate, if you're an originator, to point that out and say, look, if I put people into loans that blow up on them, my future source of business dries up. So I don't do that. And I'm very proud of what I've done to help people attain home ownership, and I want to keep on doing that.
You know what? I think it is so important to point out, and one other big point, and is, Mr. Senator, Ms. Senator, don't you want to have a healthy competitive landscape? If we allow this to come in place, it's going to wipe out so many independent mortgage bankers that are providing that are increasing the competitive environment that allow the consumers to win in a bigger way. Glenn, this is so valuable. We could just go on and on. We've got another segment we want to get to. So now let's wrap this up. For those that want to get involved with your organization, the Community Mortgage Banking Project, how do they do so? And lead into that how they do by giving us a little insights to what your mission is.
Sure. So our organization is really a public policy organization that's dedicated to advancing the interests of independent mortgage banking companies. And we have about 35 members, and we are located in the Washington, D.C. area. And we essentially advocate the interest of independent mortgage bankers both in the Congress and then in front of the federal regulatory agencies and with the media. So we're trying to tell the story of the independent mortgage banking industry to the media, to shape opinion, and also then, of course, to influence laws and regulations. We welcome any independent mortgage banking company that has a warehouse line of credit and has their full FHA eagle. And we have companies that range in size from $300 million in annual origination volume up to over $10 billion. And we're not looking for Chase Home Mortgage to be a member or Bank of America or any of the big guys. We are strictly aimed at the midsize and smaller lenders. We'd love to have anybody contact us about membership who falls into that category. We have a website, www.communitymortgagebankingproject.com. Please visit the website, and then it'll tell you how to contact us.
That's excellent. I can't tell you, listeners, get involved in this. This is, I mean, we got many, you have your different local trade associations locally. We need to be involved nationally. We have the MBA that's doing a good job. I'll tell you, you need a complement to the MBA's interest. They got some conflicts on their various interests. This is one of the most important initiatives that has been launched. I encourage you to get behind it. Glenn, we got to move on to the next topic. We thank you so much for staying here, and we want you back with the latest update. I appreciate that email you sent me a couple weeks ago. Keep it up. Thank you so much. We'll be right back, listeners, with Andy Schell in just a moment, right after this break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry. Whether you need a new warehouse line, or making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions, or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit, broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs. If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Hello, welcome back. This is David Licken with Licken on Lending. By the way, several people tweeted me and asked me what was the American Banker article, or what was that article you and Glenn were referring to. It was, at least I'll tell you, I'm not sure who Glenn was talking to, but it was Kate Beria who I was talking to. Glenn may have been talking to Sarah, who also co-authored that article. It had to do with pay for performance. If you get the American Banker, look up that article. It was published on Thursday, April 8th. I love Kate Beria. She does a great job reporting on so many of the critical issues related to the industry. Get the article. Today, we have a very special guest, someone that's very dear to me, and for many reasons, Andy Schell. He's a partner with me in the business, Mortgage Banking Solutions. But more importantly, we're not in here turning this into an infomercial. We're talking and tackling a topic, folks, that is just, quite frankly, you know, if you want to talk about something, a lot of people just don't pick accounting as the first one unless they're in a situation where they're looking and they're in trouble. And I tell you, I cannot tell you, Joe, you're a CPA, and so you can jump in and comment to this. How many people really, truly manage their business by the numbers, Joe?
Oh, it's you know, you look at the bottom line and you wonder how you got there. You look at the bottom line and you wonder why you're not better off. But, you know, there's nothing quite like having a good accounting system to answer questions before they're even asked, or to satisfy. I mean, we had a system that really caused nobody to be able to argue. That anyone who we had tied to a profits motivation had no reason to argue with the numbers that we gave, because they were strong, well-organized numbers, and it just answers lots of questions before they even come up.
Well, I'll tell you, it's so important, and this guest, my business partner, is, I'm going to tell a little story, and then I'm going to get into the formal introduction of Andy, Andy Shell. But listeners, let me tell you, I don't know about you, but when you run your business, you're good at sales, you're good at origination. The high degree of probability is accounting is not your favorite topic, nor is it your strength. I'll be honest with you, folks. I fall in that group. Accounting is not my favorite topic. My wife runs QuickBooks at home, handles it. I love it. It allows me to stay in my strength. And in our business, Andy Shell is our CPA. He is our CFO. He does all of that. But beyond just being a CPA designation, he has the unique combination of also being a certified mortgage banker. So he has a CMB designation. So Andy Shell, I know you've been waiting patiently out there. We thank you so much for coming out of the program. Andy, let's open up the topic. Why accounting?
Well, thanks, Dave. It's great to be on the show. I tell you, that's a hard topic to follow after hearing all about the risk retention issues. That's going to be a really important point. And as Glenn was talking about the risk retention point, it dawned on me that every time a mortgage company sells a loan, and if they have to hold any part of that back, their accounting system is going to have to be able to support that. And from what we've seen of many mortgage company accounting systems, they don't do that level of detail. So I wanted to jump in on the topic of accounting just here real quick and just state the obvious. For most people, accounting is the redheaded stepsister who does the laundry. You know,
it's a year-round.
No offense, Alice. we need her around, but you know, we don't want to talk about her too much.
Yeah. By the way, for those listeners who are out there that don't have your monitors on, don't worry, we don't either. We don't let you see us. Alice is a redhead, but she's one gorgeous redhead. So we just work. She's exception to the redheaded stepsister.
Well, if you think about it, one of the stepsisters was Cinderella, and we know what happened to her.
Yeah. Good.
Well,
point. Go ahead with what you were talking about, Annie. I'm sorry for interrupting you.
No. Make a couple of points about accounting. First off, accounting is all about knowing your numbers, and it's all about protecting your cash and protecting your capital. And so it's really about seeing the path to financial success. So I wanted to give a quick metaphor about accounting. And, Dave, some of these I'm stealing from you because Dave's the master of metaphors. But it's true. I'm reminded of a couple of years ago, my wife and I were driving down Highway 1 in California. It's right on the edge of the water. It's beautiful, and it's a nice windy road, and on one side's mountains, and on one side's cliffs, and there's a lot of turns. And as we were driving on this road, after a while, it's all the same. It's really long, and it's really pretty, but it's all the same, and it started getting dark. And I thought, whoops, I'm not really sure where the next turn is. And, you know, if you're on that windy road, and all of a sudden it starts raining, and it's dark, and you're lost, accounting is the dashboard that gets you home safely. Accounting tells you how fast you're going, tells you how much gas you have left, tells you the temperature of your engine, and even has a GPS to tell you where you've been and where you're going. So
imagine that, knowing where you've been and where you're going. Golly, that's a concept that a lot of people don't have. That's really going in. And now relate that, Andy, to the mortgage banking world. As far as it, like, for example, we're just going to get folks, listeners, we're only going to get this topic introduced this week, because next week we're really going to get into it. One of the topics, one of the most important parts of this is loan level accounting. How do people get there?
Well, let me jump in by saying that loan level accounting is exactly what it says. It's about understanding the details of every single loan. And if you look at the Fortune 1000 companies, you look at big mortgage banks, they all know how much they make on every single product that they make. You know, 3M knows how much they make on every single sticky pad. I used to be with B of A in the 90s, and B of A knows every cost of every single process. They know how many paper clips a processor uses in a file and how much every single paper clip costs. Now, for a mid-sized mortgage banker, that's a little over the top. But the point of it still is you've got to understand every single loan income and expense. And with that information, here's the important point. With loan-level information, you can then calculate profit per loan and profit per branch and profit per originator. And the only way to know that is by tracking loan-level accounting.
That is such a critical point. As a lot of people say, you know, I just want to know if I'm making money as a business. But, you know, beyond that, there's so much more that gets into this understanding. But why loan-level accounting, Andy?
Well, it's the driving force behind the answer. I mean, the bottom line answer everyone wants to know is, am I making money? What's my profit? Yeah. And in order to know what your profit is, you have to know how much you made on everything that you did. So on every single loan you make, you have to know how much your revenue is, how much your expenses are, and that information is captured in loan-level accounting, because you get all that information, you put it into the accounting system, and then from the accounting system you can generate reports that show how much money you made.
Hey,
well, you know,
Andy?
Hey, Andy.
Yeah, we all got questions all at one time.
Yeah, one hour at the same time, stereo.
Well, I guess I was just thinking, you know, you say loan-level accounting. I know you guys have seen lots of companies. Do you find people really understand what that means and are doing that at a level that is really the most useful and giving them the right signals on the dashboard?
Well, what a great question, Alice. It's astounding to me. And, you know, Joe's a CPA. We've gone into our firm has a warehouse line review function run by Chuck Klein, and we go in and we've looked at probably 200 mortgage banks in the past, say, 24 months, and it's astounding how many of those companies do not have loan-level accounting. All they do is they put into pricing how much they think they're going to make, and then they look at their cash and see if they have any cash, and if they have cash, they think they're good. But they have no idea if they had lock extensions. They have no idea if they have a big stack of payables that haven't been paid and that cash really isn't theirs. It could be they're holding a bunch of borrower cash and not reflecting it as a liability. There's all kinds of things that can go wrong, and most mortgage companies don't focus on it because they just don't. The pattern has been in the past, accounting's not important. But I tell you, from the things we've heard from some of the really big warehouse line lenders, they are going to be paying attention to accounting, and they're going to expect mortgage bankers to generate financial statements that are right and that are timely.
That is great. Like one spouse was complaining to the other spouse to their friends as they were talking at a dinner party, and they go, my husband thinks or my spouse thinks that we have money if there's checks still left in the checkbook. I mean, it's sometimes as basic as some, or the ignorance level can run some pretty astounding levels. Joe, you had a question there that I want to make sure gets answered. We have about 5 minutes, about 7 minutes left to go here. I really want to dive into your questions.
Well, I want to find out what Andy has seen and works best as to what factors do you put into loan level profitability. To what extent do you allocate human resources to loan level profitability or things like that, or is it pretty much more just direct revenues and direct expenses?
Well, for some of our more advanced clients, we get into overhead allocation and do it on a very specific branch basis, where things like corporate overhead for HR or corporate overhead for general IT support gets allocated out to the branch. But for most companies, if all they did was take the information from the funding request and the closing statement, put that into the accounting system, and then get the information from the lock confirmation, which is going to tell you what your profit's going to be, put that into the accounting system, and then when the loan's purchased, take the purchase advice information, put that into the accounting system. Just doing those things will make sure the escrows are right, will make sure the revenue's there, the expenses are there, and you can know how much you made on every loan just by doing those things. And then from there, that's really the foundation. From there, you then go on and into the areas you're talking about, Joe, with overhead cost allocation.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be all that complicated to make it an effective tool. Just like you said, if you're measuring that profits on the actual origination and sale of the loan were as you expected, you can learn a lot of things. But you also know which branches those loans came from and which loan originators they came from, and therefore whether or not you're generating bigger profits out of one region than another or bigger profits out of one more efficiently run branch than another. So there's a lot to learn just by knowing that profit on the loan. One other question I asked, Andy, is sometimes a loan can be made in accordance with a price sheet with an expected profit on it, and then maybe secondary didn't execute properly on the hedge or didn't make quite as much as they thought. How do you distinguish between expected profits in this loan level accounting and realized profits?
Well, that's actually that's a great question, and it's getting again a little bit farther into the complexity that I'd be happy if mortgage banks just did loan level basic information. But
yeah.
What you're talking about, what we do for clients that are at that level is that we'll set up a corporate spread, an amount that we expect the bank to make as a markup on all of its secondary activity. The branches then can add to that, and even originators can add to that from a pricing markup perspective. And then when the loan settles out, the amount that was based on the anticipated profit based on the corporate markup and the lock that was received then generates a gain or loss on the loan that's allocated out to the branch. Any difference or any incremental profit or any loss would then be captured and held in the secondary marketing department. Now, if the secondary marketing department is making excessive profits, and that's something for ownership to look at. Or if secondary marketing is losing money, then that's something else for ownership to look at. But they won't know if they aren't doing this level.
It's the having the ability to really look at your business and knowing. I mean, that analogy you use, I think it's such a great analogy. It's driving. I've driven Highway 1. I mean, used to live out in the Bay Area, so you drove a lot more than I did. But I used to drive that, and I remember one time driving it. We were started on our journey. I thought it would be a quick trip, and it turned out we got into the night, and it was a little bit concerning. I wasn't driving it quite as aggressively. When the sun set, we're now driving at light at night, and it started raining a bit. It just, I mean, how many people are spinning out when they don't need to, and they can just do it? Quick question. We're going to be going to wrapping the program up, but I want to end up with this. A lot of people stick the accounting department down a basement. It is not that important. And they also treat it that same way with the type of people they bring in. Andy, tell us quickly, we have about 3 minutes left. Can a bookkeeper set this up effectively for our listeners?
Well, an experienced bookkeeper will know a lot about QuickBooks. They'll know a lot about accounting, but they may not know about mortgage accounting. It's like if you've got chest pains, you're going to go to a cardiologist, not a foot doctor. Same thing
That's
applies
right.
to accounting. If you want help with your mortgage accounting, you need to go to a CPA that's a mortgage expert, not a guy that does taxes, because there really are unique specializations. Joe and I are both mortgage CPAs, and I can tell you there's about 15 of us in the whole country, maybe 20.
That's astounding.
So it's really important to get someone that knows mortgage accounting, not just accounting, because any CPA can reconcile bank statements and set up a basic system.
Yep.
Mortgage banking has many, many, many unique nuances to it that needs to have someone that understands those nuances to make it work right. So the information you're getting out of your system is right. Otherwise, garbage in, garbage out.
Well, that's a great launch off and a break point, because we're going to cover a lot of this next week. We're going to start getting deeper into those questions. You know what? You got a CPA also on the conversation. We got Joe Farr here. He's asking questions. He loves diving deep into this stuff. So, Joe, I tell you, let's get the word out to everybody. And tell them we have the most exciting. If accounting can ever be exciting, we're going to have the most exciting program next week on the topic of accounting and how you need to have the necessary granularity to look at your business. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in again this week. Pass the program around to everybody. Let everyone know in your network that we're out here providing the mortgage update every week at this same time. We appreciate you listening this week. A special thanks goes out to Glenn Corso for being a guest, and we thank you all. Have a great week, everybody. And Alice, thank you for joining in from that airport. Everybody, talk to you soon next week.
A weekly mortgage market update with your host, D.
David Licken of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quote Line, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.